Well, the NFL draft has all come and gone, and the Saints, five picks of value. Are they better now than they were a year ago at this time? We'll find out. Two baseball teams appearing to go in opposite directions. LSU winning two out of three with their goals right in their grasp while the Raging Cajuns get swept at home. These stories plus LSU gets another commitment from way out west. What does this mean for their recruiting purposes? These stories and more all coming your way today, Monday, April 29th, 2019.
Is clubbed to left field. No doubt about it. Gone. Three-run homer. Robinson Chirinos.
Five seconds to go. Curry down the right side, working on Tucker. Comes over, gets a screen.
Too many
down
people.
To 30 seconds. They're not going to get two for one. Down to 28 seconds. Curry working on the net. Crossover dribble. Fades into a three. Got it! Curry!
That settles it.
One-one our score. Saul Garza first pitch. Launched high in the air to left field. Going back and watching it go is Reeves, and Garza with his second home run of the season, second in his career, give the Tigers a 2-1 lead on the first pitch offered up here in the top of the third inning. 2-1 LSU.
Oh, surprise, surprise, my producer extraordinaire. Yes, it's great to be back after a week off of no fun, no vacation, none whatsoever. But we are back, and we are ready to roll. So, CD, thank you for you and Raymond and whoever else filled in the gap. I greatly appreciate that, but we are here, and knock on wood, good to go. It's great to be with you. It's Monday, April the 29th. What did we miss? Well, we missed a lot, including the NFL draft, where the New Orleans Saints made two trades and five selections on a team that really, you know, they've got a lot of pieces in place. You're always looking to get better. There's no question about that. But they didn't have much work to work with entering the draft, and I think they made the most of their limited resources by turning their original six selections into five picks. Here's General Manager Mickey Loomis summing up the Saints draft.
I like that we got, you know, three guys that were graded in our top 70. I like the opportunities that we had today. Alize Mack and Caden Ellis, and look, I think we've got some players that can help our team.
And that's what it's all about, helping your team. It all started out with McCoy, filling a position of need, a center from Texas A&M, Sean Payton, on the Saints' first pick in the 2019 draft.
He was kind of the guy coming in today, you know, paying attention last night. I wouldn't have been, you know, surprised if, you know, he was someone that was selected at the, you know, towards the latter part of the first round, and you started seeing the corners go early today like we thought would happen, and a few of the receivers, and, you know, you just kind of pay attention, talking with a few teams, but he was different than, he wasn't in a group, he was one of the, I would say, probably the target coming in here this morning. We're just feeling like, you know, this would be the vision's clear, and certainly that we felt really good about his talent.
They moved up to acquire him, a second round pick. The Saints dealt one to Miami to move up to select McCoy. But if things go as planned for the Saints this season, the selection will be a low second rounder next year, and McCoy could develop into a multi-year starter. He's going to be He's going to be playing from day one. LSU baseball wins two out of three. They lost the opener. They come from behind. They win the next two, including one in dramatic fashion on Sunday, to win the series over Alabama. We'll hear from Bill Franquez here coming up in about 7 minutes as he recaps preliminary meeting with the media as we speak. Bill Franquez will wrap that up. We'll find out about some of the pitching arms. Is Cole Henry going to be good? Are they going to go back to what they had originally planned and move Zach Hess to the bullpen? We'll find all this out as best we can from Bill Franquez. Meanwhile, the Raging Cajuns swept over the weekend by Texas State at the Teague. The Cajuns are 20-27 overall, 8-13 in conference play. And head coach Tony Robichaux sums things up like this.
We hit 300 for the weekend, and we out-hit them 13-7. And with seven hits, they've got 10 runs. I mean, mathematically, you can't do that. But you can when you walk people and hit people. And then we finally, you know, get the game where we need it. And then we walk two more people. Those two guys score. And then we hit a batter. That guy scores those last three tack-on runs. We win. We win 8-7, right? But because of two more walks and a hit batter, they get to put on a few extra runs. And then from there, we get the bases loaded, and we got a chance to take the lead, but we don't take the lead. So it's kind of what we've done all year, you know, on both sides of the ball. And when you do that, you're gonna end up, you know, where we're at right now.
And where they are right now is struggling, to say the least. But go on the road, win a couple games there, we shall see. The NBA playoffs, the semifinal round has begun in both conference play. The Golden State Warriors in game one at home took care of business over the Houston Rockets, 104-100, a very contentious ball game. Technical fouls, arguing with officials left and right. Oh, it sets up to be really, really good. Kevin Durant, another 33-point night, says he's tailor-made for the moment.
I don't know. I've just been tailor-made for the moment, I guess. You know, been learning a lot so far as a player up until this point. So I think I'm starting to put everything together out there on both sides of the ball. And I'm not looking at points or shots that I get up. It's just how focused I am at each possession.
Win each possession. Chris Paul, the former Hornet, now with the Rockets, got two technical fouls. The second one caused an ejection with about 3 or 4 seconds left in the ball game. A very spirited ball game. CP3 with his comments after the 4-point loss.
Playoffs, whether it's one, whether it's 30, it's a loss. I think first thing we do is we look at ourselves. We got to defend better. Especially me, I missed 3 free throws and, you know, techs. You know, I get that tech, first one, last one, too. You know what I mean? Those points.
Those are points. Got to control yourself a little bit on that one. Meanwhile, in one of the playoff games, matchups in the Eastern Conference, game one, the Boston Celtics go on the road. They beat the Milwaukee Bucks 112-90. They look really, really good. It's not how you start. I've always said that's how you finish. Boston's got a lot of weapons. They really made Giannis Antetokounmpo work very hard for what he had. He ended up with 22 points on just 7 of 21 shooting. He looked out of place for the first time all season. Giannis, after the tough game one loss.
Right now, we just got to focus on playing better. Obviously, it was one of the toughest losses we've ever had all season long, and especially at home. Just got to regroup, watch clips and tapes, and be ready for Tuesday.
Be ready for Tuesday. Ryan Palmer and John Rahm cruise to victory in the Zurich Classic, a record score of 26 under par to post an easy 3-stroke victory at the TPC of Louisiana. I love the format. I really do. I think it's terrific. And congratulations to LSU's Nick Brossette, who signed with the defending Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. So much more on the draft coming up later. Coming up in the program, we've got Bill Franquez here in just a minute. Mike Scarborough will talk about the latest commitment to Ed Orgeron's Around the World 2019 recruiting class. 2020 recruiting class. And then Mike Dettillier in hour number two, a special two-part segment. We'll break down each and every draft pick of the Saints, talk about some of the Tigers, where they went, any surprises, and who's going to be the top Tiger next year. It's all coming your way. Great to be back. Here we go. Monday edition, the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Man, it's great to be back. So will we.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfrich Show. Live and local. 1037 The Game.
We like our beer flat as can be. We like our dogs with mustard and relish. We got a great pitcher. What's his name? Well, we can't even spell it.
Not midweek. It's final exam time on campus at LSU. So the Tigers will welcome in Ole Miss for a Friday, Saturday, Sunday three-game series. The Tigers winning four out of three out of four last week and winning two out of three against Alabama in Tuscaloosa to improve to 29-16 overall, 13-8 in the SEC. Bill Franquez was there for each and every pitch as the voice of the box and the color analyst on the road for the LSU Sports Radio Network. And Bill, kind enough to join us. Bill, good afternoon, buddy. How are you?
Hey, Jordy, I'm doing very well. Thanks very much. Glad to be back in Baton Rouge after a big weekend in Tuscaloosa.
How dramatic was that final inning in Tuscaloosa on the third game there?
Yeah, that was a little too dramatic, unfortunately. Coach Maneri always says that the job of the closer is to make sure that he records the final out for the tying run, or the winning run crosses the plate. That, in the end, that's what happened. So Devin Fontenot got the job done, but not without quite a bit of drama. Alabama with the bases loaded, two outs, the tying run on third, the winning run at second. Coach Maneri said that the kid just bounces the ball to the third baseman's head. Alabama wins the game.
Yeah.
But fortunately, Fontenot, who had some command issues throughout the inning, he settled in with a laser-like focus. Fired three straight 95 to 96 mile per hour fastballs, and Keith Holcomb, the Alabama DH, was just overwhelmed. And Fontenot got the first called strike, and then two straight swinging strikes, and that was the ball game. And the second save of the weekend for Devin. And
he
made it look easy on Saturday. On Saturday, he threw an inning and a third, perfect innings to get a save. Yesterday, a different story, but in the end, the Tigers managed to win, and there was a couple of great defensive plays in that inning, too, that I think might have been overlooked just a little bit. Chris Reed got a forced play for the first out of the inning on a ball that was hit in a difficult place for him to field it behind third base, where he composed himself and got an out. And then Hal Keating is really, as Coach Maneri just said a little while ago, talking to the media here, that he thought that the play that Hughes made might have saved the game, because another inch or so, the ball gets by Hal. Alabama likely tries to get in there, so limited Alabama to just the one run by getting there at first base, and then Fontenot was able to finally finish it out.
Bill Franquez, kind enough to join us this afternoon. So you just mentioned that Paul Maneri met with the media. I'm sure the first question was, let's talk about your pitching staff. What is the status on Cole Henry? Is LSU planning on going back to what they said they were going to do a week ago before Henry got hurt or had that sore arm? What's the latest update on the pitching staff?
Well, you're right, Jordy. Cole Henry was the subject of the first question that was asked to Coach Maneri, and he apologized. He didn't have a complete answer quite yet. Cole did throw over the weekend. He actually went home to his home in Florence, Alabama, and his dad was actually his pitching coach while Cole was in high school. So he threw some under the watchful eye of his dad, and indications are that he threw without any pain and that he's feeling pretty good. Now, whether or not that translates into being able to pitch this weekend against Ole Miss, we don't quite know yet. Coach Maneri said that, of course, this is finals week here at LSU, so
right.
The players are taking a couple of days off to concentrate solely on taking their finals. And Cole has a final today at 3 o'clock. So Coach Maneri said he anticipates meeting with Cole after the final, maybe around 5 o'clock or so this afternoon. He'll get a better idea of how Cole is feeling. But he said, just based on the text that he shared with Cole, on the conversations that Alan Dunn had with Cole, that he appears to be feeling much better, and that, you know, at least those are there are encouraging signs that Cole might return this weekend. Now, okay. I guess we'll know more once Cole's status is determined. If Cole could pitch this weekend, does Coach Maneri go back to that plan of moving Hess to the bullpen?
Right.
That wasn't really addressed. I think he wants to wait and see exactly what Cole Henry's status is, and then he'll move forward from there. The other positive development in the rotation is that Landon Marceau pitched very effectively yesterday.
He sure did.
So Marceau now gives the Tigers another option in that weekend rotation. So if Henry's not available this weekend, at least there's some solace in the fact that Marceau could be a very viable option pitching this weekend against Ole Miss.
Bill Franke is kind enough to join us. Jaden Hill is apparently he feels a lot better as well. But, I mean, it looks like you're getting the team back in shape down with this stretch run coming where you do kind of, not to steal the old cliche, but you do kind of control your own destiny.
Yeah.
You just got to go win games.
Yeah, it does feel that way, Jordy. Maybe finally LSU will field a complete team. It's a team that's been beset by injuries all year long. As you mentioned, Jaden Hill, Landon Marceau's been out. Cole Henry's out right now. Gavin Dugas, just now returned, has been out since late February. Zach Watson's been out for a time. Chris Reed's been out. Hess, of course, pulled the groin. Hal Hughes had a thumb injury. He's able to back to play defense, fortunately for the Tigers. So there have been a lot of missing pieces throughout the year. Maybe finally, we're starting to see the potential of what this team can be if everyone's healthy. I think Gavin Dugas being back and being inserted into the starting lineup really gave the Tigers a boost offensively. He played very well, came through with some big hits. He also played pretty solid defense. He's not known as a great defensive player yet very early in his career, but he made some nice plays at second base before Hal Hughes took over late in the game. So I think there's definitely optimism
right.
that perhaps this team can maybe reach another gear as we are in the stretch run. You know, there are only 11 games left in the regular season. That's really hard to play. So
amazing.
Now is the time. There's no, you know,
yeah.
There's no time for deliberation or experimentation anymore. But, you know, as Coach Maneri indicated, he's got to go with the best nine players every day. They're going to help the Tigers win games because LSU is in a situation where its postseason fate will be determined by what happens in these next 11 games.
And to your point on that note, Paul said he was really, really upset Friday night, didn't think his team was competing, said
right.
his team, they took six called third strikes, and he tweaked the lineup a little bit. So every day presents a new challenge.
Absolutely. And he liked the way it worked out with the lineup adjustment, Zach Watson leading off. Zach Watson was the leadoff hitter for Team USA all last summer, so it's a role to which he is accustomed. Antoine Duplantis is such a versatile guy. That England lineup, he gets second. And Coach Maneri thought the biggest moves were putting Cade Beloso in the three spot and Josh Smith in the four spot. And both those guys have proven to be big-time run producers, guys who can give you an extra base hit. So I think those two moves also proved to be successful. And then he said he didn't really want to have to move Reed and Cabrera down in the lineup, but at this point, those two guys really haven't been producing like they have been earlier in their careers. So hopefully, being down in the lineup for those two guys, maybe they'll see better. They'll see more fastballs. There'll be a little less pressure on them, and they'll get back to where they were earlier in the year.
Yeah, Bill Franke is the voice of Alec Box Stadium again. Final exam week, Ole Miss coming to town, and that conjures up the big storyline that we'll all be talking about, and that's
right.
the father, Mike Bianco, the head coach of Ole Miss, going up against his son for the LSU Tigers. That ought to be interesting.
Yes, that could be. That could be. I'd say that might be a prominent storyline this coming week. Of course, Drew Bianco is the third of the four Bianco sons, and they also have a daughter, it's the baby of the family. But, in fact, I spoke to Mike Bianco today. He called just to see how things were going over here, and didn't give anything away. I didn't give anything away, of course, but he was just talking about the week, and just want to get an idea of what Drew might expect from the media this week. Because obviously, although it's such an unusual situation, you know, Drew's on the other team, but Drew is also Mike's son, so in a way, he was kind of looking out for his son just to get an idea of what kind of questions Drew might face this week, and what how he should answer and things along those lines. So certainly it's something we're all aware of, but I think both Mike and Coach Mannary want the focus. They certainly aren't going to shy away from this storyline because it is so unusual and it just caused a lot of interest. But I think naturally they want the focus to be on the teams because this series is huge for both teams. Both Ole Miss and LSU are tied for second place in the West. Both teams are in contention not only for a West title, but also for an overall SEC title. So it's a series of huge implications for both teams. But naturally, there's going to be some talk about the Bianco family, I'm sure, throughout the week.
Sure. Well, you've been with this team through thick and through thin. It's not the season that LSU had anticipated. The injuries weren't what they had hoped for or expected. But where you stand, you've been through a lot of this. You've seen similar scenarios. How do you feel about this LSU baseball team right here, right now?
Well, I feel much more confident, Jordy, based upon some of the things we've discussed. It appears as if the team's healthier. And I like the fact that Friday night, LSU may have played one of its worst games of the year and lost to Alabama.
Okay.
And at that point, the team could have said, you know, gosh, you know, we're not where we're supposed to be. You know, we're not competing as hard as we can. And instead of feeling sorry for themselves and moping, they came out the next day and got a huge win. And I can't overestimate how big Eric Walker's performance was. Eric Walker on the mound on Saturday really set the tone and got the Tigers back into the – helped them get back in the right frame of mind. The team gets a win on Saturday and then holds on to another win yesterday. And suddenly the whole mindset changes and the confidence is back. And at the same time, the team's getting healthier. So I think what – physically and mentally, the team's getting healthier. So I certainly like those aspects. Granted, these last 11 games are going to be against a very tough opposition. So I feel good. I feel good that the Tigers are certainly in a position right now to host a regional. I think what would be within grasp would be becoming a national seed, but it's going to take a lot of work to get to that point. LSU's going to have a big-time run to get to that top 8 seed position. But I think hosting a regional certainly within the Tigers' grasp.
Bill, thank you so much. Better them taking finals than you and I, my friend. We've been there,
done that.
Don't want to do it anymore.
Yes.
Thank you for your time, my friend. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Jordy.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bill Franquez, the voice of Alec Box Stadium, with the latest update on LSU baseball. LSU football recruiting. They get another 5-star. That story next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Minutes after the hour, welcome back. This edition of the Jordy Hultberg Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We got another one of those Hold That Tiger alerts from Coach Ed Orgeron over the weekend, and apparently it was a huge one. Let's find out all about it with the mastermind behind TigerBait.com, the one and only Mr. Mike Scarborough. Mike, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Hey, glad to be with you.
All right, so another five-star receiver comes in the fold. Tell me, who's the latest commitment to LSU?
Well, that's Rakeem Jarrett, St. John's College, Washington, D.C. And, you know, you're talking about another top-shelf wide receiver. This class at that position is just absolutely remarkable. You've got Kayshon Boutte from Westgate, New Iberia, committed, who is the number one, I believe, the top wide receiver in Louisiana. You got Burton from California, who's one of the top two or three out west, arguably the number one guy in California, and now the top East Coast guy in Rakeem Jarrett. And, you know, going into the weekend, I reached out to my longtime Ohio State source. Jared had been a guy that was in the fold for them for a while. You know, other schools in the mix as well. Tennessee had a good visit with him a couple of weeks ago. And I said, man, I'm getting word that Jared's, you know, about to pull the trigger. And he's like, well, they were confident all leading in the weekend. But I knew LSU thought it was a two-team battle between them and Tennessee before he even got in town. And sure enough, Saturday, the rumbling started in the morning that he was about to do something. And sure enough, he did. I mean, could they take another wide receiver and get to four? I think it's possible. But in a real hurry, that LSU wide receiver position is going to get revamped if they hold on all three and add another one.
190 pounds, so he's gotten. They've gone away from getting those 6'4", 6'5", 6'6" kids. This kid must have speed to burn.
Yeah. This, you know, you look around the SEC and just look at Alabama and the type of receivers they have. You know, other schools that are performing at a high level, running RPO offenses. You know, they're all using the shorter slot style wide receivers. Yards after the catch guys. You know, LSU's got a lot of tall guys, but you really want those guys that really excel in the 7-on-7 offseason, mm-hmm. that can make things happen after the catch and can take the quick slant and then make something out of it.
The 2020 class now has 13 commitments. You've got 2 5-stars, 10 4-stars, and 1 3-star. I don't know in my – and I really have just started to follow this after getting, you know, talking with you a little bit. But in years past, I can't recall an LSU football staff going to all points north, south, east, and west to get prospects. But they sure are doing it this year.
No. This is, you know, first of all, you know, people, you know, we've talked about it. You know, this California thing, what is it all about? Washington, D.C., you know, Michigan last year, Tucson, Arizona, had Lathan Ransom, a safety, in for an official visit this weekend. You know, Bill Bush has been out to Tucson 3 times to visit that high school in Ransom. We're seeing the LSU coaching staff truly use the LSU brand and open things up nationally. And it's not an instance where you're overlooking Louisiana prospects or thinking the grass is greener. I mean, you're looking at the positions of need, and you're looking at what the state has, and certainly you're going to recruit the best of the best here. But there's no reason why LSU can't go across the country. And now you've got young coaches like Joe Brady, particularly with the offensive players, it's a huge draw. High energy, 28 years old, can relate to these younger kids. They're excited about the new offense. So that's part of the reason. You got Elias Ricks, a 5-star number one cornerback in the country in California, who seems like he's got his full-time job is working Twitter all day long. So he's helping you recruit. So and I just, you know, look, there was years ago where there was the linebacker's name. There was a top flight linebacker in North Carolina, and I did an interview with him, and he said LSU was his favorite school. And then later in the week, I was at the LSU camp, and this was a kid that would have been Chavis' recruit. And I say to Chavis, you know, I talked to so-and-so the other night. He says LSU's his favorite. And his reply was, yeah, that's good, but I'm not sure when we can get to him. He meant by that was that Les Miles, you know, I don't know if it wasn't the purse strings with the travel department or, you know, allowing his coaches to get out on the road early in the football season or what, but that philosophy is totally gone. And, you know, I'm going to be real interested. You know, I don't know if you could ever get that number, but I would love to know the difference between the travel budget for recruiting and how much they're spending to go all over the country versus what they were spending 4 or 5 years ago. I bet you that number is almost double.
Oh, I've got to believe it. Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com, joining us. You mentioned Elias Ricks. There's a report that he is going to be switching high schools, and the rumor is so he can graduate sooner and become an early enrollee. I'm all for that with the number one cornerback prospect. I'm all for that.
Yeah. You know, look, there's been the rumor that he could graduate and be a part of the class of 2019 and be able to play for LSU next season, transferring to IMG to play his senior year and being a midterm grad. The problem with the rumor that's been out there, and when I've reached out to him to get him to reply about it, is that would be all well and good if LSU didn't sign a full class of 25.
I got you.
Yeah.
All right. We shall see.
So I reached out to Rich. I said, man, you got a lot of people nervous down here. These rumors of you graduating, foregoing your senior year, because LSU signed a full class of 25. And he basically said, I see what you're trying to do. You're not going to get me to slip up. You know, so he didn't give me the answer. But, you know, there was a rumor this weekend that he was transferring to Dunham, you know, for his senior year. I mean, it's
– Wow.
He's told people out in California that he'll be, you know, letting people know what the true details are at some point. But, I mean, he said that like 2 weeks ago.
Can you imagine Dunham going from Stingley to Ricks one year after another? I mean, my goodness gracious, wouldn't that be something? All right, so it just appears that, you know, they're going everywhere under the sun to get the best prospects, and I like that. And right now, according to 247 Sports, they're the number one ranked recruiting class in the country, and the question is, can they hold on to it? Can they continue to build upon this? You would know better than I.
Yeah, I think they do. You got a lot of excitement going into the season. LSU will be, you know, one of the top six, seven, or eight teams preseason. We'll see how it shakes out, whether they're picked to finish second or third in the West. I wonder how evenly that vote will be split between A&M and LSU for the number two spot. But I think LSU should be the number the second team in the West. You know, this is a year where you can legitimately say, unless you have a run of catastrophic injuries, that you know, this could be an 11-1 or 10-2 football season for sure. So, but you know, look, everybody said, look, it's nice to have the top ranked recruiting class, to have these five stars, you know, but it's all about linemen, and that's definitely the case.
Yeah.
I think the outlook for defensive linemen is there. I think they're going to get what they want there. Jaquel and Roy's looking good for LSU again.
Okay.
Jacoby and Guillory, you got Jalen Lee at Live Oak. The concern, I think the biggest position now to pay attention to is offensive line. And it's something we've talked about for years.
Sure.
You can have a top five ranked recruiting class in the country on average every year, but those rankings never take into consideration what your program's needs are. And when you see how low the numbers are with offensive linemen, defensive linemen, the fact that your roster is mostly guards with the offensive line, they
right.
need three or four legit offensive tackles in this class. So
right.
that's the thing to pay attention to the rest of the way.
We shall see.
You can win a bunch of football games, and every week after that first game in November, what are we talking about that following week?
Yeah.
How LSU's got to get better with linemen.
Only one offensive lineman commit to this point in the 2020 class, and that is Cortland Ford. So keep an eye on that one. Michael, thank you so much for your time, buddy. Always appreciate the expertise. Take care of things at TigerBait.com.
All right, Joey. Thanks a lot. Talk soon.
All right. You got it, my friend. All right. We'll take a time out here when we come back. Not a good day for Will Wade. I'll explain next.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Holford Show on 103.7 The Game.
And we welcome you back. 47 minutes after the hour. Don't want to cook tonight? Want to watch the NBA playoffs or your favorite baseball game on the tube? How about heading to Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway, the brand newly refurbished and reinvigorated Hooters? It's a brand new look on the inside. It is absolutely pristine. The food is great. The fun is outstanding. The TVs are everywhere. you've got a chance. My goodness. Go in. All the special deals on a Monday, Hooters just makes you happy. It just does. Well, he may not have to testify, but that didn't keep LSU's Will Wade's name from coming up in a federal college hoops trial today, according to reports emerging from the trial. Will Wade's name coming up on a tape of a former Arizona assistant coach discussing a potential deal for Naz Reid was played in court today. On the tape, ex-Arizona assistant Book Richardson reportedly discusses a potential deal in which Will Wade would hire him as an assistant coach in return for helping secure forward Naz Reid. And according to reports, mentions a potential deal for Reid that included $300,000. According to Richardson, Wade said, look, there's a deal in place. I got $300,000 for him. Richardson said, give me half and I'll make sure the kid goes there. So give me half, give the kid $150,000, give Book Richardson $150,000, and Naz Reid will come to LSU. Well, Naz Reid came to LSU. Book Richardson never did. Never did. Wade's been under heavy scrutiny. There's no question with the multiple wiretap phone conversations. I don't know. You know, there's been no corroborating evidence provided in court connecting Wade to any type of potential deal. But the recording adds to a growing list of potential problems both Wade and LSU may have to face in the future when the FBI completes its investigation and the NCAA, if they so desire, begins its own. Now, LSU announced Will Wade's reinstatement on April 14th, 2 days after the long-awaited meeting, and through his reinstatement came a price. Amendments to his contract included the forfeiture of $250,000 in bonus money he was owed due to LSU's regular season and postseason success last season. And more importantly, it granted LSU the right to fire Wade with cause if the NCAA found him guilty with a level one or level two infraction. So there's all kind of ways to look at this thing. Why would Will Wade agree to those terms if he didn't feel in his heart of hearts that he was okay? Why did Naz Reid come to LSU and not Book Richardson? So I don't know. I don't know what to think. Naz Reid's already been convicted in this and is no longer a coach, obviously. So we're going to have to wait and see what happens. But then, you know, anytime your name is mentioned like this, it's not good. Now, according to Dan Wetzel, the ex-Arizona assistant, Book Richardson, on recorded tape, basically says despite making nearly $250,000 a year, he was broke from using so much of his own money to pay recruits. What? I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get it. So you can break this down and you can come up with all kind of loopholes in this thing. Yes, LSU got Naz Reid, but no, Book Richardson was never an assistant coach at LSU. So what happened there? What happened? If LSU did their due diligence and the questions in front of Will Wade and his attorney, this all had to be covered, checked, cross-checked. Everyone doing their own investigations and coming up with this. So we'll see what happens. But again, it's another day and another implication. And sometimes you are guilty by perception. And the perception is not good. But then again, I go back to my original statement. Why would Will Wade agree to the terms of reinstatement? He could have held out. But he knew he had to get some players. He knew he had to get some recruits in. And still no new signees as of this point in time. He had to get some new recruits. He had to get back on the road. And so we shall see. We shall see. I'm asked a question in my email, askjordy@gmail.com. Is there any chance that Avery Johnson would come here as an assistant / recruiting coordinator? I cannot fathom that in any way, shape, or form. Avery Johnson was an NBA head coach. He was a Division I Power 5 head coach. I cannot imagine. I don't think Avery needs the money. I cannot imagine him being as an assistant in this thing. And remember, Alabama's name has popped up in this investigation as well. So I don't see that at all, although there is a spot available. There's no question about that, as Tony Benford has left to go to TCU. No, not to Texas A&M, but to TCU. So we're just going to have to follow this and see how it all plays out. I do not believe that the FBI is going to give anything to the NCAA. I just don't see that. And remember, our new athletic director and the head of the NCAA are near and dear friends. And I am sure, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that a phone call was made. What's going on with this? What kind of plans do you have? What do I need to know before I have to get involved in something? I don't think that was a deal killer for Scott Woodward at all. He just went and got rid of one basketball coach and brought in another even better coach at A&M. So I think his love for the university far supersedes anything. He's not afraid of making a coaching change and having to make a new hire, if it ever got to that point. And time will tell. Time will tell. Does the NCAA want to do this? Again, remember, the golden calf is the NCAA basketball tournament. If you go after LSU, you're going to have to go after Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, Arizona, Syracuse, and on and on and on. I just don't know if they have the manpower or if they want to fool with that at all, because you don't want an NCAA tournament without your blue blood teams in there. So time will tell. But again, in summation, Will Wade's name mentioned in the federal college hoops trial again is a tape of a former Arizona assistant coach discusses a potential deal with Wade that was played in court today. According to Book Richardson, LSU coach Will Wade offered him a job to help with the recruitment of Nasri. This has been done forever and a day. Rudy Macklin came to LSU. So did his high school coach. Stanley Roberts came to LSU. So did his high school coach. Howard Carter came to LSU. So did his high school coach. Leonard Mitchell came to LSU. So did his high school coach. And on and on and on and on. It's done all the time. So we'll see. According to Book Richardson, Will Wade said, look, there's a deal in place for Nasri. I got $300,000 for him. Richardson said, give me half, and I'll make sure the kid goes to LSU. Stay tuned. Our number one is history. Hot topics, Saints in the NFL draft with Mike Dettillier coming up in hour number two. This is the Jordy Helpert Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle. tackle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two, and away we go on this Monday, April 29th. Hope you had a great weekend, and kids are back in school, so school zones are in effect. Please be careful as you're out and about on the highways and the byways. Busy second hour, lots of NFL draft talk with Mike Dettillier. So let's get busy as we do each and every day. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Well, just to go to show you, you never know. This fact comes in from concerning the NFL draft. 33 players who weren't invited to the NFL Combine were drafted. 117 players who participated in the NFL Combine went undrafted. So you just never, ever know. CD, great to be back, my friend. How are you?
It is great to have you back, Jordy, after a week away. And trust me, it was definitely a little bit more empty without you inside the 237 Roof Studios out and back.
I missed it, but it's good to be back and better than ever. So let's roll.
It's great, Jordy. We're going to start things off looking over at the NFL draft, of course. I think we got to start off looking at the Saints and their big trade, moving up in the second round and giving up their second round pick in 2020, Jordy. So it gets me thinking, you okay with that? Giving up that second-round pick to get a guy like Eric McCoy?
This is what they do, and I don't have a problem with it. That was a position of need. Max Unger retiring. You need somebody that's going to be a competition. We're going to talk to Mike Dettillier about it, but I think he loves the move. I like it. So let's do it. You got to protect Drew Brees. You better have a good center. So I'm all for it.
Well, I love the pick, though, Jordy. That guy is going to wind up being an absolute stud for this franchise. Hopefully he can be a long-term starter.
Indeed. That's right.
And sticking with the draft for another moment, Jordy, I got to say, probably the biggest surprise that happened Thursday, Friday, Saturday, that had been Greedy Williams and his dip down the draft board. But now he's with the Cleveland Browns, meaning you got three, count them three, LSU Tigers on the Cleveland Browns. It seems like the NFL has a consistency having three LSU Tigers on a team. That's the max you can have on a team.
Yeah. I don't know what happened. Maybe the fact that Greedy Williams didn't go interview or go to other teams like most everybody else does. I don't know. Maybe he got some bad advice. I'm not sure what happened to him, but I know the Cleveland Browns are going to be having a highly motivated, very skilled defensive back. I think they got a steal of a deal. I was shocked that Greedy Williams made it past Thursday. Very surprised, to be quite honest with you.
Oh, I was extremely surprised as well, Jordy, because it felt like he'd wind up probably being a top 10 pick heading into the draft, like a few weeks out of it. And then all of a sudden, the fact that you get any visits, really, that was probably the biggest red flag to a lot of people, and that wound up being a big reason why he wound up bouncing out and going down to the second round of the NFL draft. Again, it's a steal.
I agree. A mistake by the lake is now LSU, right? My goodness gracious.
And they definitely have a solid chance of making the postseason, Jordy.
Not according to Vegas. Vegas says no, they're not going to make it. We'll see.
Speaking of Vegas, Jordy, this kind of popped up earlier, just a little while ago, in fact, during the break, is the over-under win totals according to Caesars. So I'm going to get your pulse on this, Jordy, for the over-under for the NFL season.
Okay.
The Saints, it's set at 10.5. Which way are you leaning, over-under?
I'm going over. I'm going over.
How far over? Are you going 16?
No. I'm going 12. 12-4.
12-4, I can definitely live with that. You know, definitely still early. Kind of, you just hope everybody can stay healthy.
That's always the key.
That's the biggest thing, Jordy. And, you know, that's definitely the second highest, like, win total according to Caesars.
Really?
Yeah.
Chiefs. Oh, the Chiefs are number one.
No, hold on. Chiefs, Rams, and Saints all are set at 10.5.
Okay.
The Patriots at 11 wins.
Wow. Okay. I'm going over, and we're going to win it 10 years to the day, man. 10 years. Let's do it.
I love it, Jordy. I love it. Maybe we'll be able to put down some money on it because, well, I know apparently State of Louisiana might actually have their head out of their backsides and finally give us what we want, and that is the ability to bet on sports. But, again, that's a topic, again, for another day, Jordy. Of course, the other thing we got to talk about is the NBA last night, or yesterday afternoon, I should say, was definitely the hotbed of controversy.
Yes.
All the calls that wound up being missed in Game 1 between the Warriors and the Rockets. Jordy, first off, is flopping still an issue in the NBA? Because it just seems like every time I turn around, you saw James Harden or somebody flopping. Yep.
Both teams are very good at what they do. The Warriors are very good at getting up and inside, and the Rockets, Chris Paul and James Harden, are very good at twisting and contouring their body to make contact after the release. So the NBA is going to have to sit down with both clubs and say, and the officials, and say, here's the deal. This is what's good. This is what's no good. Now go play. And if I see one Houston Rocket turning his body into the defender, I'm not calling it. I'm not. So let's get it right. Let's play basketball and quit all this garbage that they're doing. But you love the drama. I mean, you love the contentiousness and the chippiness already just through game one. Let's stay tuned for game two. I can't wait.
Game two is going to be a lot of fun, Jordy. But, of course, I think the biggest game everybody on Twitter was talking about last night wasn't on a basketball court. It wasn't on a baseball diamond. It as heck wasn't on a gridiron, Jordy. But, of course, it was on a battlefield last night, Jordy. I know you're a big Game of Thrones fan. I'm not necessarily that big of a guy, but apparently this was about like 90 minutes of pure greatness.
That's the only thing of television I watched all week because of circumstances. I've never seen a battle that long. I can't imagine what the cost was. It was bizarre. It was unbelievable. I can't wait to see what the next episode is. I'm not going to give anything out. No spoiler alerts or
anything like that.
But it was unbelievable. It really was. It really was.
Like I said, I want to kind of – I've never watched Game of Thrones. I never watched a single episode. But, you know, I was on Twitter last night while I was taking care of some other stuff at the house, and I'm just like, all of a sudden, I just see it nonstop. Everybody's talking about the Battle of Winterfell. I'm like,
yes,
I really need to watch this. You know, at least that one episode, and be like, oh my god, this is amazing, and maybe I can get hooked.
You've never seen anything quite like it. I can promise you.
Yeah.
Now you're not going to know who the characters are.
Yeah.
And you're not going to know the storylines, but it was riveting to say the least.
Like I said, that's kind of what I heard for the most part. I mean, it was definitely a nerd's weekend dream. Of course, you had that, and you had Avengers Endgame, which, don't spoil it, everybody. I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't either.
Yeah, so leave us completely in the dark until, let's say, Friday. Let's go with Friday.
That's fair. That's more than fair. So get out and go see it, and you're going to love it. You're going to love it. Absolutely. Going to love it.
Fantastic stuff, Jordy.
What else did I miss, Clint? Anything of significance?
Oh, you know, I mean, you missed Scott Woodward getting introduced as the new athletic director. Yeah, you know, that was great. You know, he flexed his knowledge on Louisiana figures and history, and that was awesome.
Well, he's a fraternity brother of mine.
Yeah.
So,
Really?
We can slip the secret handshake and all that kind of stuff. So.
We're going to need video of this.
Okay, you got it. You got it. Woody and I go back. We're buddies, and he'll do a terrific, terrific job. So, man, it's great to be back. Thanks for pitching in,
really,
and you and Raymond and everybody else. I greatly appreciate it. And hopefully we will be back in this thing for a long time to come. So there you have your hot topics for the day. We'll take a time out here. When we come back, we'll talk NFL draft, specifically the New Orleans Saints, with our good friend Mike Dettillier next on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. welcome you back. The New Orleans Saints didn't have much to work with entering the recently completed draft, but I think they made the most of their resources. They made two trades. They made five picks, and it seems to be a lot of quality over quantity approach that kind of makes sense for a team that doesn't have a whole lot of glaring needs. But nobody covers it better, and nobody has done a better job through and through than our good friend Mike Dettelier, at Mike Dettelier, MikeDettelier.com, Black and Gold Report. Have you had time to breathe yet, Mike? How are you?
I'm fine, Jordy. No, listen, I'm used to being a long-distance runner. It's 30 years for me, so I know the routine. Yeah, but I'm good. Thank you.
Well, good. I'm glad you know the routine. I'm glad, and we're thankful to have you. Value, is that a term that we should use in describing this draft for the Saints?
That's the term I always use, because you know, drafts about, I don't care what the NFL people tell you, it's all about filling needs. Mm-hmm. It's all about value, bringing in good people, and also being able to evolve in a changing game of pro football, where this pitch and catch part of the game, you have to match up downfield. And so I think value is probably the one word that used to maybe incorporate all that. And I'd like, a year ago at this time, well, I was a big fan of Marcus Davenport.
Yeah.
And I thought they did well getting Will Clapp later. I wasn't crazy about the Saints draft. Now, you can say, well, those guys made it on other teams, but you know what? They ain't helping you.
That's right.
You know, if you were good enough, you could have made this team. Don't give me that baloney about, well, we only got a few select spots. All I know is, in the last 5 years, the New England Patriots, who have a lot of rings on the finger, they average 17 new players each year.
That's amazing.
Either as veteran free agents, undrafted free agents, or rookies. So that's a great throwaway line. Man, we got so much talent, we don't need them picks. Yeah, right. But you got to look for tomorrow. You might not need them necessarily in 2019, but it's for the future. And there's so much role play today in the NFL. You don't necessarily have to be a starter, but, you know, there's a role for you. And also on special teams. So I like what they did in this draft and getting value, as you brought out, and also getting guys that will fill a specific role on this football team.
Gotcha. Mike Dettelier, kind enough to join us. Oh, by the way, the NFL and Park Avenue kind of know how to market their product. 47.5 million people watched the draft. And how about Nashville with 600,000-plus people in attendance to watch it? That's just remarkable. The NFL is just really, really good at what they do, Mike.
Oh, no question about it. I had to laugh. You know, they had somebody questioning Roger Goodell about, you know, how the NFL is in dire straits today. And he almost sort of laughed a little bit. You know, look at this crowd. Look at the ratings that they've gotten, you know, for not only TV and radio, for the NFL draft. Come on. Listen, here's about college people, and this is an old Archie Bunker line. You understand. You're just a college person that don't know nothing about the real world.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of question is, yes, that's not a business that's around that doesn't have some issues today, okay?
Yeah.
Everybody's got them. Man, you can't say the NFL's not a success. Even with all the turmoil of a year ago, with so much swirl, look how this NFL has bounced back. I mean, yeah, it took a shot for a little while. It's right back into the mainstream of America. So, you know, I got friends of mine that, you know, they swear, I never watch a game again. Once they took their knee, I never watch a game.
Yeah.
Then they can tell you play by play what happens.
That's right. That's
you know, they can tell you every. My thing is, well, either you got the best ESPN connection in the world, there's no way you know this and you're not watching. Well, you know, I take a glimpse. I just watch the highlights. I don't watch the games. Well, you're still watching.
That's right.
It's one of the two.
That's right.
Either you don't or you do. But it is a great market, too. I was out there earlier last week to do some stuff for the Titans Network, mm-hmm. and I'm telling you, it was unbelievable.
They put it,
this is going to be the blueprint of what I think what every city would want to have to do for the week long. Man, Nashville did it. They did it strong. We'd love to have it in New Orleans, but because of Jazz Fest, I don't know where they would put everybody, to be honest.
Right. Wow. Amazing. Mike Dottiglia, kind enough to join us. Let's go over round two, number 48 overall, center Eric McCoy out of Texas A&M. Are we going to look at this down the road as a beautiful pick? They had to give up a second rounder to move up to get him. Do you like the pick?
Yeah, and you were able to get back the fourth round pick. So you got yourself back into the mix there. My belief is you win in this league, yeah, you got to have a quarterback, but also you better win up front. I watched Eric McCoy for 3 years at Texas A&M. He wasn't a good player. He was a dominating player. Jimbo told me last summer he's the best football player we got on my team.
Wow.
So you got a lot of pretty good players on that A&M football team. He's smart, real strong guy, good run blocker, technically sound. All you need to do, flip that tape on when they played Alabama and what he did with Quinnen Williams. Flip it on when he played Dexter Lawrence. Look what they did against LSU. Now, nobody liked the ending of how that game ended out. But you know what drove Coach O up the wall more, not say more than the ending, but it would be in the two spot. Look what Trevion Williams did, rushing the football against him.
Yeah.
I mean, Trevion had an unbelievable game, and late, LSU could not affect mine. Couldn't affect him. And Eric McCoy, he's a steady football player. He ain't a watcher, Jordan. He's playing, and he's starting in year one. People say, he's got to learn all the calls. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You got to learn them. But, you know, on this football team, it's a little different than most. You know why? You don't make the calls up front. Drew Brees.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
He makes the calls up front. You're not playing with a rookie quarterback or a second-year guy. But, you know, all I know is every time I watch Eric McCoy play, he is a big-time player. 3 years, gave up one sack. Last year, gave up zero.
Wow, that's amazing.
Texas A&M ain't running the football all the time. They pitch it pretty good.
Yeah, wow. He's versatile. He's intelligent. He's tough. And as you said, he does produce. That sounds like a Saints lineman to me from the get-go. Let's go to round four, number 105 overall, the safety from the Florida Gators, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson.
I'm glad he's out of the SEC, all I can tell you. I've seen enough of Chauncey.
Yeah.
He was my 37th-ranked player. You got him in the fourth round.
Wow.
Listen, he's a stud player, too, in the fact that Todd Grantham is college football's version of Greg Williams. Man, he's all about, I want to knock the quarterback out. I want to hit the ball carrier in the backfield. And look how he used Chauncey. He was a free safety, a strong safety. They put him in the nickel to guard the tight end. They blitzed him off the edge. He did with him what he did with Jonathan Abram a year ago at Mississippi State, or 2 years ago, I should say now. They used him all over the board. He's had 9 pass interceptions for a safety. All you need to do is to flip that film on of the Chick-fil-A Bowl against Michigan. He was all over the field, 2 interceptions, brought 1 back for a score. He wasn't playing up against chopped liver. I knew is this time next year, Shea Patterson, he'll either be a first or early second-round pick quarterback. And one thing Todd told me about him is that Mike, he's a yapper. And listen, being from the South, I understand what that yapper means.
So
funny is we got him on, Jordy, right after he got picked. He joined Zach and I. And the first thing he said, man, listen, I'm ready to go down to New Orleans. And, you know, I want to help that team win. I'll play any position they want. I'll play on special teams, and then I'll start talking to them. So he confirmed the yap real quickly. But you got a guy that will take Kurt Coleman's spot. Because that's why you brought Kurt in last year. And Kurt might have hit the wall as a player. And now you bring in a young version of Chauncey, who will help you on special teams. He'll be a role player. And the way teams are today, they play three safeties in the 70%, from 72 to 78% of the time in this league. So you need a three-quarter starter. Chauncey's a player.
So with Marcus Williams, Von Bell, and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, three almost kind of interchangeable safeties that they can use, and plus you get a special teamers. I like it, and the fact that you had him rated so highly makes me like him even more. We got to go down to round six, number 177 overall. Safety Saquon Hampton. A lot of people scratch their heads on this one. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think they picked best player on the board. You got to trust your board. So on my board, he was the 70th best player. Look where you got him.
Wow.
And so here's a guy similar to Chauncey because the game's changed. You've got to be able to match up with the three wide receiver sets. They flexed out tight end. He played in the box like a linebacker. They blitzed him a lot coming off the edge. He was used to cover the slot man. He played high safety. Again, similar to Johnson, they moved him all over. Mm-hmm. He was a team MVP last year. He had some shoulder injuries as a sophomore and a junior. But he got healthy, really played strong, good special teams player. So he's a guy that, again, a specific role and can help you on special teams. But like Johnson, because the college game, just similar to what look at what Grant Delpit did, is doing at LSU.
Plays
everybody
everywhere.
Wants one like him.
Yeah,
I had one in Chauncey. Mississippi State had one in Abel. Well, he was Rutgers' version of it. I mean, so really good football player, high IQ, really tough guy. And again, he'll have to make his mark here on special teams and be part of the packages. But he's used to playing those positions.
All right, we're going to take a quick time out here. Mike, sit tight. We're going to come back and continue our observations on the New Orleans Saints 2019 draft with expert analyst Mike Dettillier as we continue here on the Jordy Helpert Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Jordy Helpert Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, as we continue our conversation with NFL draft analyst expert Mike Dettillier. Round seven for the Saints, number 231 overall, a tight end from Notre Dame. I don't know how to pronounce his first name. Alize Mack?
Alize.
I don't know. Alize. Alize Mack.
Alize
okay.
Mack. No, we thought he had some Cajun roots to him with that first name, but that no, he said no, I'm a California guy and all this and that. He was either the number one or two ranked tight end in the nation when he came out of high school, Nevada kid.
Okay.
I had a coach that was really trying to get him, a good friend of mine, and he said, I have no idea why he goes to Notre Dame. They're not going to use him. He's like a flex tight end. He's been inconsistent, I guess is the best term to use. At times, a little bit unfocused. Some maturity issues. Last year, he caught 36 passes for the Irish. He is very similar athletically to what the Saints have in Jared Cook. You look at them athletically, a 6'4", 250-pound guy. That's what Cook is. Can run, 4'7", 40-yard dash. Press the right buttons on him. You know, he's a player. But I didn't understand why Notre Dame didn't use it. Again, the quarterback situation,
right?
I guess, had something to do with it. But, man, to have that big man running down the seam, running down the middle, would have made a lot of sense for me. It's not what Notre Dame does. They were more of a power-ranked football team. He's a solid blocker. He's not a great one, but he's solid as a blocker. He's going to make his money in this league as a pass catcher.
Okay.
And he worked out for Dan Campbell. and Dan liked him. So that tells me a lot. Man, listen, Dan is one tough dude, and so he liked what he saw in Alonzo Mack. And again, he was my 10th ranked tight end, but he was on the all potential team, which means he really hadn't done it in college for different reasons. If it was scheme, if it was maturity, whatever, it didn't hit for him. But boy, he's got all the physical tools that you're looking for in a flex tight end. And they used him, they flexed him out almost like a receiver at times. They use him as an inline blocker. So he's done a couple different things there. And for that late, you got good value.
Finally, 13 picks later, still in round seven. I don't know why. I just got a feeling about this guy, this linebacker from Idaho, Caden Ellis. If you used to be a quarterback in high school and now you're a linebacker, that tells me some things. Could this potentially be like a late-round gem at a position of need?
Man, listen, you got some genetics in him. Because, you know, I'm getting old in this business. I covered his dad, Luther Ellis, who was a first-round pick with the Lions. And then he's got a younger brother, Christian Ellis, who's the starting middle linebacker for Idaho. And I was watching Idaho play late one night and kind of half paying attention, half not. And I keep hearing Ellis on the tackle, Ellis on the tackle. And I was like, man, and Kate's making a bunch of tackles. Then I realized that Christian had won the middle linebacker spot. So Caden has been used a lot of different ways at Idaho. They've used him as a pass rusher, and he's been disruptive as an edge pass rusher. They've used him in the pass coverage part of the game, too. He was a prep tight end. They recruited him to Idaho. He was a former prep quarterback, but they recruited him to Idaho as a tight end. Hmm. He was a gray shirt. They ran out of scholarships. So the first year, you know, he paid his way until they had a scholarship open for him, been a four-year starter there. After his sophomore year, he convinced the coaches, let me play tight end a little bit. And so they used him actually as a flex tight end. And I think he caught about 20 passes in 2 years as a flex tight end. But in this particular game and watching him, he's running down the seam wide open. He throws his hands up. All of a sudden, two defenders run in his direction. And they leave the running back open, he catches the ball, and he scores. So he's got a little bit of taste of healing him.
I see that.
Think about, here's a guy who's a pass rusher, but also been pretty good in the coverage part of the game. He's played quarterback in high school. He was recruited as a tight end and played some tight end at Idaho and has played on special teams. And they got a bloodline there. And again, you'll be hearing his brother's name called. I don't know if he's coming out early next year or the following, but when you're going to watch Idaho, if you watch Idaho play football or that brand out west, you'll be hearing his brother's name called a lot because little brother can play too. He's a beast of a player. So he's an interesting prospect. It was tough for me to put him where exactly he would be. With teams, look at him as a pass rush defensive end. Would they look at him as an outside linebacker? I put him as an outside linebacker. I thought he'd be a late round pick, free agent type player. And basically, that's kind of how it ended up. And it's funny, they signed Chase Hansen from Utah, who's a very similar player. Who he's had three uncles play college football, and his dad, and one of his uncles actually played with the Patriots. Former quarterback, tight end in high school. He was recruited there as a safety. They moved him over to outside linebacker.
Wow.
And he's played special teams. So now you got not only one in Caden Ellis, but you signed Chase Hansen, who went on a Mormon mission. So he's 26 years old. But you got two guys with the flexibility. And that's one of the things with Sean that he's put a lot of emphasis on over the last few years. What can you do to help this football team, and in how many areas, when it comes down to late-round picks and free agents? And so Hansen and Ellis both bring some versatility there. You know, I work with a former quarterback all the time, so, you know, he likes that part.
Yeah. So in summation, two trades, five selections. What kind of grade do you give the Saints this year?
I look at it as a whole. free agency and the draft.
Okay.
I hate to do the grade thing because I think that's
all
difficult.
Right.
But my thing is, are you better today than you
did
were?
Did the Saints help themselves? Yeah, did the Saints help themselves?
Okay. Think about it since the season ended. Are you a better team today on paper than you were when you ended the season? And the answer is yes. You brought in a center that's replacing the best center that's been on this football team in 20 years. And you have got other pieces now. You've got to be able to match up in the coverage part of the game. Well, they were good against the run. They gave up a lot of big plays in the secondary. So you got some matchup situations you got to get better at. And so just like last year's draft, it's going to be measured a lot about Davenport. This year's draft certainly going to be measured with McCoy. But I like what they got in the later rounds because of what you brought up earlier in the show, value and versatility. The two Bs can help you in certain areas. And, again, now you've got all your – you don't have a seventh-round pick a year from now in a second. But you still got the core of that draft in that at least you got a 1, a 3, and a 4 next year. That you didn't have that 3 and a 4 this year until you made the trade with McCoy. Because I always think the meat and potatoes of every draft is rounds 2, 3, and 4. Yeah,
right.
First round, a lot of sizzle with it. And you can, if you're there for a star player, I get it. But really, the meat and potatoes of every draft is what you get rounds 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah. We know Devin White, real quickly, went number 5 overall. Were you surprised that Greedy Williams fell to day 2?
Yeah, I really was. He was the best ever cornerback in his draft class. But, you know,
what happens there?
You got to put good people around you, Jordan, to tell you what's best for you. In the long run, you've got to make this decision.
Mm-hmm.
But you're taking advice from people. And not to take those visits is a negative.
Yeah.
Now, again, I've seen other guys not do it and be first-round picks. But, and people say, oh, he missed the bowl game. That hurt him. Come on. Nick Bosa played 5 games last year. He ain't played no bowl game. And he's the second pick in the draft.
Yeah.
And to flip the pancakes, Drew Lock, who I thought's a better player than Daniel Jones. I've got friends of mine in the scouting department. We had him ranked much higher than Daniel Jones. And look where Daniel went. Look where Drew went. Drew played his senior year at Missouri. He played in the bowl game. He went to the Senior Bowl. He took 17 visits. He still ended up in the second round. So, is there a blueprint for that? Not really.
Yeah.
But you got to put yourself in a position, Jordy, to get yourself picked as high as you can. I think Greedy and his management team fumbled the ball there. And listen, we all make mistakes in life.
Yeah.
You got to put yourself with people that can at least give you the best advice. Greedy did not get that.
I'm with you. Devin goes number 5. Grant Delpit next year is going to be a high pick if he stays healthy. Where do you have him early on?
Grant Delpit is going to be the safety version of Devin White, a middle linebacker. I mean, come on. All the stuff Grant can do as a cover linebacker, you can play him in a box, blitz him off the edge. He's got great ball skills for a safety. Now, man, he's a tall, quick safety. He's differently built than Jamal in a lot of ways. But, man, next year, he's going to be what Devin White was to middle linebackers. Grant Delpit's going to be the safeties next year, and he'll be a top 10 pick. And we all know that the evolution of this game and how to use players, man, Grant's going to be a real valuable guy.
Yeah. Only 3 LSU players drafted. Next year, they should have more than that, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
a lot of it having to do with health.
Right.
And we'll see, like what Kalavon Chase on, like with Christian Fulton, Jacob Phillips, along with Grant. And, you know, I'm interested to watch Sullivan, who I think could have a huge year this year for LSU. And then certainly the defensive lineman with Fahoku, who he can play at the next level, no question about that. And Rashard Lawrence. So you're going to have a lot more picks next year than you will this year. That's why, and I don't want to leave out Joe Burrow because I think he's going to play the next level.
I do too.
I really think he will. So, you know, you're going to catch, if you got a chance to catch Alabama, this is the best year to do it. Because of what you have returning,
yeah.
And a lot of losses junior-wise for Alabama, as usual. And they're starting to get hit with that, really for the first time.
Yeah.
A lot of juniors leaving out early. And that's what sort of chips the ice away from your program. And if you lose a senior, is one thing. But when you start losing those juniors, and that only affects your starters, Jordy, what it affects you? Depth. And look at this draft class with LSU. Mm-hmm. Look at all the Louisiana kids that didn't go to LSU.
Cody Ford, second round pick.
He ends up at OU. I was at a camp with Cody. He told me LSU had not recruited him hardly
That's
at all.
Amazing.
And he goes to OU. You look at Jalen Ferguson, went to Louisiana High School. He goes to Louisiana Tech, and he breaks Terrell Suggs' record. Irv Smith Jr. from Brother Martin committed early to A&M. LSU got involved, but as soon as Nick got in there, he's out of there. Going for Cohen. And Jerry Tillery from out in Shreveport. Jerry wanted to play a defensive tackle. And he told me the main reason he went to Notre Dame instead of LSU, Coach Miles wanted him to play tackle, offensive tackle. He wanted to play defensive tackle.
Golly.
He goes to Notre Dame.
Yep.
Man, listen, you can't lose big men in this state.
No.
You don't have those type people that grow on trees. So I think this sort of draft indicated why Les is in Kansas today, is that he was missing out on those wheelhouse players for him, offensive, defensive linemen, which really had not left the state. And now you saw that exodus get out of there. So it is what it is, Jordy. You know, just sometimes, and you miss. Listen, it ain't an exact science.
You miss
on players. And just like Coach O missed out on Nick Robinson, the cornerback from Thibodeau. He was told by a few people, including myself, you better go get him. You know, and he's been a 2-year starter at Louisiana Tech. They offered, but at that time, Tech had already made the inroads, and he wanted to play right away too. And he wasn't a sitter; he was a watcher. And so you make mistakes sometimes.
Yeah.
But this draft indicated where things started to unhinge. And again, you can point at quarterback, but look at those linemen that left this state; those big men that left.
You're right. Mike, you're the best in the business, man. I know you're here, there, and everywhere. We greatly, greatly appreciate your time. Thank you so much, and go get some rest and relaxation soon, okay, my friend?
Well, I got a few more days before that happens. But I appreciate it. Thank you, Jordan.
Okay, buddy. That's Mike Dottiglie. Follow him on Twitter, at Mike Dottiglie. MikeDottiglie.com, the M&D Draft Report. He's already starting to work on next year's edition. So gives the Saints, because of the draft and free agency, they are better on paper today than they were at the end of the season. There you go. I'll stick with that. We'll be back to wrap things up. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game. Acadiana's number one sports station. Great catching up with Mike Dottiglie. So good. So good at what he does. Wow. People said maybe the best job he's done as a head coach. He's just been knocked out of the playoffs, but 7-year-old Greg Popovich just finished his 23rd season with the San Antonio Spurs. The team has made the playoffs in each of the past 22 seasons, a streak that ties for the longest in NBA history. Speculation, his wife passed away, whether he would return or not. He's won 5 NBA championships with San Antonio. And he said that today negotiations are underway for him to sign a new deal to continue coaching the San Antonio Spurs. That will be great. A lot of people talked about the run that Texas Tech made in the NCAA tournament and that their head coach, Chris Beard, would be a hot commodity. Well, he agreed today to a new contract that will make him one of the highest paid coaches in college basketball. Beard signed a 6-year contract that will pay him $4.575 million annually, keeping him under contract through the 2024-25 season. His annual salary is now the fourth highest in the country behind Kentucky's John Calipari, Duke's Mike Krzyzewski, and Tennessee's Rick Barnes. So Chris Beard parlaying an incredible season into an incredible contract. All right, history lesson time. We do it every day at this time of day. We go back to on this day, April 29th, the year 1981. With the number one pick in the 1981 NFL draft, the New Orleans Saints selected running back George Rogers out of South Carolina. Heisman Trophy winner, was a really good back, but could never lead the Saints to the promised land. But on this day, back in 1981, George Rogers became a New Orleans Saint. All right, birthday wishes time. If today, April 29th, is your special day, we salute you and hope you have a fabulous, fabulous rest of your birthday. You share it with the likes of 36-year-old Jay Cutler, the former Vanderbilt quarterback and Chicago Bear quarterback. Happy 49th birthday, Master P. Drank a cup of coffee in Baton Rouge, lived in the country club of Louisiana. Yeah, anyway, Master P. Happy 61st birthday, Michelle Pfeiffer. Still gorgeous as ever. Happy 65th birthday to Jerry Seinfeld. And happy 86th to Willie Nelson. So happy birthday to them. Happy birthday to you. If it's your anniversary, happy, happy anniversary. I hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. So it's final exam week in college, so not many baseball games other than the weekend. Got to take care of the books. But we heard some great comments today from Bill Franquez, who just met with Paul Maneri. We heard the recruiting update from Mike Scarborough. And the NFL draft update with our good friend Mike Dettillier. So we hope you enjoyed it half as much as we did bringing it to you. Tomorrow, more on the NBA playoffs, more on LSU and UL baseball, more on the NFL draft, and whatever else comes down the pipeline. So after a tough week, great to be back with you. I missed you. I really did. And I'm thrilled to be here and doing what I love to do. CD, outstanding job as always. Thanks to all of you for listening in. Your thoughts and your prayers, greatly appreciated. To our partners that make it possible each and every day, thank you. Thank you. We have only one Monday, April 29th. Hope you have a great rest of your afternoon and evening. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4 p.m., same great station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Until then, I'm Jordy Hultberg. Thank you, and stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.